Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We made it to Friday. It's the Lockdown Series, Volume 2, Episode 31. We have a great show lined up for you tonight and a brilliant guest. Let's roll. Oh, as we sit here waiting with bated breath to face Manchester City, because everyone's excited about that. Welcome back to the show, Princess Guna.
Woo! I'm back. It's Friday, thank God.
And Super Kevin Campbell.
Boom! Back. Yes.
And our very special guest, sports journalist, broadcaster, presenter, all-round epic human being, Miss Alison Bender. Welcome to the show.
Hey! Thanks for having me back, guys.
Oh, we're really happy to have you back. It's been a while. It's been a bit too long, but you've been very, very busy doing a bunch of things, working for various networks, doing your football thing, and also you've launched your own podcast, which we'll get to at the very end of the show as well. But I just want to get stuck right in, you guys, with Alison, because she's been covering the Arsenal. She covered the game against Leeds. No.
Yep.
Yes, Leeds. And she's covering the game this weekend. You spoke to Saka. I think I just want to start there because Saka's become the jewel in our crown. And I was watching a Sky Sports interview today, too, with Mikel Arteta, where he was talking about Saka. He started to elevate him a little bit in terms of protection, how important he is to the Arsenal, which is key. Tell us about his vibe, you know, what your sense was and when you spoke to him. He seems like a really good kid who's not, you know, distracted by the bright lights of London and just loves his football.
Yeah, definitely. You've got that right. I just got that vibe from him. He's almost like a bit of an excitable schoolboy in it, to an extent, which you kind of love because it shows he's still enjoying his football. I mean, his eyes absolutely lit up. I asked him about Aubameyang. Of course, he'd scored a hat trick. So it was a good time to talk about Aubameyang. And he just said, you know, he's just so amazing. And I like the fact that we spoke about kind of the blend of youth and experience. And I said to him, you know, how does it feel that Arteta's put a lot of trust in you, but he's also surrounding you by some experience as well? And he said that he absolutely loves learning. You could just tell as his eyes lit up that he just loves working with the people around him. And you also got the vibe that he really likes Arteta. I mean, why wouldn't you at the moment when you're playing so well? He's got to play, but the problem is there are so many games. I mean, Sophie, that's why you were probably having to think which game was it, because it's just thick and fast at the moment, isn't it? Obviously, yeah. You know, Europa League as well, Benfica, and it's just relentless. I mean, as a reporter, I'm finding it hard enough to keep up. But if you're a player and you've got to go and run 90 minutes, I'm amazed about more muscle in injuries, to be honest with you.
Mm. Yeah, and we're suffering from those. Kieran Tierney, of course, Thomas Partey. What was your sense of being around Arteta and the team? And, you know, obviously that was a really good win for us. We had had a good run of results, and then we had that terrible game, you know, against Wolves, going down to nine men. But it seems like regardless of that, there's a belief around the team and a belief around Arteta. More importantly, the players believe in him. Did you get a sense of positivity when you were around everybody, Alison?
Yeah, I did actually, to be honest. And I asked him whether he felt that this game was a really important one, like almost like a turning point game. Because if you look at your fixtures, I'm sure you're very well aware, you know, starting with City, you've got some really, really tough ones. And so to get a win at that point in time, and to also get Aubameyang, obviously he's had his family problems, to come back in. Imagine if he then went on a run where he just wasn't seeing the back of the net. So I just think it was so important. Oh, and just a little interjection. I love the fact that he has DRE still. When he scores a goal, that's his tune. And I was loving it because it's like, I love hip hop. Kev, I know you're the same. I don't know about you girls, but I almost was willing him to score just so I could just hear
him.
Because Bellerin scored and it was like Elvis or something else. And I was like, no, bring back Dre.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's funny because I've interviewed Arteta over the years as a player, and then I've interviewed him sort of when he was at City, and now I've interviewed him again. And it's weird because it's like he feels like the same person, but then almost like a more serious version of that same person. So sometimes you sort of you see that kind of relaxation a little bit where you remember the player. But he has to be sensible and serious because he can't be buddy-buddy. He's got to make tough decisions. He's got to drop players. But I find him quite easy to talk to post-match. He's always really level-headed. He always gives me a nice answer, doesn't ever cut me short. And yeah, I get the feeling that the players trust in him as well.
You know, it's interesting, Ellie, though. Has he changed from when you interviewed him, City and playing, and then our manager?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, I would say perhaps just a tiny bit more of a serious side. And I'd say the same for Frank Lampard as well, when he was a player and then when he was a manager. There's just that tiny little tweak where they're, you know, just a bit more serious. But by the way, I was loving, I don't know if you heard Pep Guardiola's press conference.
I saw that today, yeah.
Yeah, heaping on praise. And like someone said to him, Jamie Weir said to him from Sky, you know, do you feel pride in, I mean, it was a decent question. Do you feel pride when you watch Arteta in action because you inspired him? And he was like, hey, listen, I didn't inspire him. Like, he's gone and he's done this himself. And I just thought that was really good coming from Pep. I mean, that's the kind of a Pep thing to say, isn't it? But, yeah. You know, it was, I think he has a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, I heard that today. It was an empowering comment, actually, that he said, like, he's doing it on his own merits versus, you know, me teaching him. Because a lot of the times you've got that story, and I think it's getting a little bit old, the professor versus the master. We've seen it over and over in football. And I think, like, he was trying to put the kibosh on that. Go on, Amanda.
I was just going to say that I've said this on the show a few times lately. Al, I've got loads of different Man City mates, and they rate Arteta so highly that if he did leave us, they'd want him back as a coach with Pep. And it just goes to show with Pep saying, you know, there's no bad feeling. He obviously had a lot of respect for Arteta. And it just would be lovely if we could beat him once. On Sunday.
Well, in the league, because we've done it in the FA Cup.
Just Arteta beat him in the league.
Alison, what's your thoughts on the job Arteta's doing right now?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I think it's really weird times at the moment, isn't it? I mean, we've seen really strange results from so many teams. We've seen a lot of inconsistency from Arsenal, but then that's nothing new, is it? We've seen a lot of lack of leadership from Arsenal, but that's nothing new. You know, with all due respect, we've seen moments like in the Leeds game where you absolutely nail it. You're 3-0 down at half time, and then you come out and look shaky. That's nothing new either. So it's like, you know, I've seen Arsenal have some brilliant performances, and then I've seen them have some dire performances, and you never quite know what you're getting. And I do quite like the fact that I feel Arteta's very level-headed. I would like him as a manager. The way I see it is we're all humans, and we've all got to work with, you know, various managers, various players. And I kind of think, if I was a player, how would I think about Arteta? And I think, you know, he's played the game, so he understands a lot about players, which I think is not always important necessarily, but I think it is important. Obviously, he doesn't necessarily have the experience of a big trophy cabinet, but then he has worked at Manchester City who do. So I think he deserves time, to be honest. I think that we don't give enough time to managers. I personally think Lampard deserved a bit more time. I mean, Tuchel's come in, he's doing a great job, fair enough. I reckon Lampard might have had similar results with the run of games that we've had, to be fair. But I really do hope that Arsenal do give him time, because I think he's a really good manager.
Alison, did you think that, you know, because one of the things that gives me hope, where I've been very critical of Arteta, and I try to look at the Man United Ole Gunnar Solskjaer model in the sense that, you know, could Chelsea have done that with Frank? Look where Ole was. Everyone wanted him fired, bottom half of the table, really struggling. Then gets them to third in the league. They get Champions League football. You know, now I don't think anyone's going to catch City now, but the fact that they've had this evolution, and really, is it him or is it Bruno Fernandes that has changed the fortunes of that team? It's really difficult, isn't it, in modern day football, when you have an affinity with a manager like you have had with Frank. You followed him as a player. You know, you see him as a manager, you want him to do well, but at the same time, you also understand that it's a results-driven business. So it's kind of tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really tough. And exactly that. I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they so easily could have got rid of him, and I thought they were going to. And yes, things have come around. Like you say, players like Bruno Fernandes have been absolutely brilliant. I understand. As a Chelsea fan particularly, I understand that hiring and firing with kind of consistency does bring silverware when you're bringing on, you know, big name managers from all over the world. But I just would like to see a model. I mean, we're never going to see the Sir Alex Ferguson, the Arsene Wenger type of model, never. But I'd like to see a five-year cycle, because I think actually you've got to, I mean, you come in and you've got to buy your own players, you've got to work with your own players, you've got to have your philosophy coming through the club. Perhaps you've got to blood some youngsters. There's a lot you have to do, right? I mean, Kev, you must know as a former player, like, you have to have that time to get to know someone, right?
Well, I keep championing that. I think Amanda's on the same page. Obviously, the problem with a lot of Arsenal fans, Alison, is they believe, because of the stature of the club, that we should be up there challenging. And for, what is it, 15, 16, 17 years now, we haven't really been in the title race. It's been 17 years since we last won a title.
Oh.
You know,
and you have been in the title race. You just haven't.
We haven't.
Maybe three times.
We haven't been in the title race. We've been close, but nah.
Not really.
Because if we were going to be in the title race, we would have the players to win it. That's when you're in the title race. We didn't have the players. I mean, I'm sure if I asked you 5 years ago, Alison, what do Arsenal need? You would have said a centre half and a centre midfielder. You would have said it. You know, 10 years ago, you would have said the same thing.
I said it so many times. I used to have a chat show on the Premier League, and I actually was laughing. I was like, just replay. Every time we did an Arsenal episode, I was like, just replay what I said last year and the year before.
Yeah.
The year before.
Oh my God. My Facebook memories tell me that too. My Facebook memories, they all come up. They're the same, Alison. You've hit it bang on the head right there.
Yeah, but it's interesting though, Alison, because something you just said before, it is so true. There are so many games, so many, that our players are not used to playing like this. You're living in a pandemic. You've got no fans in the stadium. You're playing every 3 days and people are expecting us to win every single game. It's not going to happen. No one is consistent. I'm sorry. I know Man City.
Only City.
But only lately. And City weren't. They came down out of the top two or three. So they now have found some consistency. But you're right. You cannot call it. You know, we could beat City on Sunday.
That's the funny thing. You actually could.
Arteta on this season, which is what I keep saying, we need to give him a normal season. Hopefully we'll be back in August in our seats. We'll have a normal life coming back. And then just please God. And then we will judge him at the end of next season. Now we just have to get on with it and just hope that we can go further in the Europa League. We can maybe get into the Europa League spots. But Thomas Partey, who's never been injured, is just constantly injured with us. He's playing too much, obviously, or something's going on. Tierney.
Playing too much?
Well, why is
Tierney,
he injured?
That's a huge loss for you as well, isn't it?
Oh, it's massive.
And I don't even though he's ready, I don't think he's going to start, is he, on Sunday? I don't think
Tierney's back. He played last night.
Do you really think he'll start on Sunday?
No.
I think he will, because I think he played him for 15 minutes to get him ready for Sunday. I do. But Thomas Partey is a massive. He is the linchpin. He's what we need, as you said, every year, the centre midfielder.
Can I give you one little piece of insight, actually? Is that, I don't know, you may have heard it before, but you said about the stadium being empty and everything. And I've covered a lot of the matches with no fans. And I don't know what it is, but there is something dreaded about your stadium with no fans. It really is not a nice
place. Was it like scary?
Do you know what? It sounds really silly, but it's
haunting.
Cold and haunting. And it's like, so I spoke to Jeff Shreves there at the Manchester United game. And like, this guy has been covering football for 20, 30, whatever years. Mm. And he just said to me, I have never been so cold in my life. What is it about this stadium? And then I went and spoke to Martin Tyler and he said the same. And then the cameramen were moaning. And there's just something about the fact that there's no fans. It's just the kind of, I know that it's different for the players because they're playing, obviously.
It's soulless.
But the soul, it really does feel. And I've been to Stamford Bridge. And even though it's without fans and it's terrible and it's sad, it doesn't quite feel as different, but there is something about Arsenal that just, it feels a bit strange right now.
Well, it's not that much different when there's fans in there, to be honest. It's not Highbury.
Mark,
it doesn't have a soul.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
It doesn't have a soul. hybrid of soul. Yeah. And a hybrid of soul. It's just so new. We haven't done the business here.
I love
We haven't done the business. So
talking about that.
That's why Goodison Park is still so special, because it's very similar to Highbury, that closeness. Yeah.
Alison, obviously you've mentioned Chelsea quite a bit. So come on, how come you support them?
So is my dad. I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't really think I had any choice when I was a kid. Dad was a massive Chelsea fan and started taking me when I was young, me and my sister. And I mean, he is lifelong. So I became a Blue and never looked back, really. And it's been great, actually, because when I first started going, it was obviously before Abramovich era and we never really won. And it was just great for me just going with my dad, and I loved it. And then suddenly I'm out in La Liga working for Real Madrid, and Roman Abramovich takes over, piles all this money, and we start winning stuff. And then, of course, you get the whole, oh, yeah, prawn sandwich brigade and whatever. I don't care. But, yeah, I mean, and it made my dad really proud. Like, it was a nice feeling to go and work for Chelsea TV. And my dad was always like, you know, and he's really funny because he always thinks, you know, he's that generation who are a little bit sexist, unfortunately. And every now and again, one of his mates will hear me on the radio and he'll be like, oh, my mate Gary heard you. Apparently you know a bit about football. And I'm like, thanks, Dad. I'll take that as a compliment then.
Do your children like football and your husband?
Yeah, they do. They love it. So my husband, actually, he doesn't have a team, but he quite likes Arsenal. It's a bit of a weird one that he doesn't have a team, actually, because he loves football.
Alison, hold on a minute. How do you mean he doesn't have a team, but he quite likes Arsenal? He's a gooner. Just say it.
He's a gooner.
He grew up in Somerset in the countryside, and he just loved watching football, and he likes Arsenal. My boy changes. He's only six. He changes. He's had Arsenal for a bit, then he went Chelsea, then he went Leicester, then he went Manchester City. So fickle. But it was actually funny, because just before I jumped on this podcast, I actually said to him, I said, when I say Arsenal, what do you think about? I was just curious from a young boy, from a six-year-old brain. You're not going to like what he said at
all. Go on.
Go on, tell us. We've all heard
what we've said.
He just said, I just kind of picture them getting in great moments, but then just losing the ball or having the ball taken off them. It was just such a random
He's right. Answer. He's bang on. Get him on. He's right.
Yeah, that's the problem. And one of the issues that is massive, and we're not really going to go into this, but you sold us Willian, and it has become, yes, I want to talk to you about Willian. He's had one good game for us. The very first game of the season, we thought we'd got a real bargain, and it's just got massively worse. I don't condone any abuse or anything, obviously, but I'm allowed to criticize a player. I don't understand what Arteta sees in him, constantly bringing him on. But as a player, obviously you've watched him for years, give us your take on him.
I just don't get it, to be honest, because when we sold him to you, I was furious. I was like, we are selling a really decent player to a, I might have said title rival at the time, or
right, London rivals.
Exaggerating a little bit,
London rival, yeah.
Exactly, a London rival. And yet he has really, like, not played anywhere near expectations. And I don't quite understand it. I mean, it can't exactly be a settling issue, because it was only, you know, in Chelsea, so
down the road.
I don't know, maybe you can add some more.
Alison, you know, the biggest thing I think some Chelsea fans have told us is this was the Willian that we were frustrated with at times. He'd go 1-2-3 games, brilliant, and then disappear, show up for a big game and then disappear. As rival fans, we always used to see him as, from a free kick, he could be lethal, whether he's playing on that right side or, you know, obviously there was Hazard in the team at the time who took a lot of the kind of burden of driving and putting that team on their shoulders. So did you see that inconsistency from him when he was at Chelsea? Like, what's the true Chelsea fan perspective on him over the years that he's been there? He's won a lot, but was he always that consistent player, or did he dip in and out like a lot of Chelsea fans have said to us?
Yeah, no, he absolutely, I mean, nail on the head. He was an inconsistent player and he did dip in and out. But I think overall, I think when you sort of look across the whole time that he's been there, I think you'd be like happy with his contributions. But I think the problem is with you, I don't think he's shown any, I mean, I can't, picture or remember any game that he's shone in for Arsenal, to be honest, in an Arsenal
The very shirt. First one when we played Fulham, he was brilliant. I was so excited. And honestly, not one game since. That's months and months ago.
I think what we have to take into consideration is when you look at the Chelsea squad that he's been involved with, a lot of the times he didn't need to
carry
be
the
that
team,
guy.
Right. Yeah.
He doesn't need to carry the team because Hazard at one stage was carrying the team virtually on his own. You had quality everywhere, you had a virtually impregnable defense, etc. So when it's needed, he could step up. But when he comes to Arsenal, whether we like it or not, we've been a club in decline for years.
Mm-hmm.
And if we think Willian's just going to come in and all of a sudden start turning it on and our fortunes are going to change, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. And yet, he's had an absolute Lionel. He's had a nightmare. I totally agree with that. But I think we're not being fair if we expect him to just change our fortunes. I think it's a lot deeper than Willian.
Yeah, we did a show about how Willian gets the blame for everything. You know, we have scapegoat players, Alisson. There's Xhaka. Pepe was that a few weeks ago and last season as well. Whereas if you look at Pepe's stats, they're a little better than what you see on the pitch. I've criticised Pepe greatly. You know, and then he gets a bit of a run, he's benched. So we have that. I'm sure Chelsea as well. You've got those scapegoat players. I know some people give Mason Mount a hard time, even though he's really super talented. Tammy Abraham's, you know, you've got now Jorginho's back in the side and Tuchel's kind of, you know, playing players that maybe Lampard didn't rate as much. It's really weird, isn't it? Because, you know, a player doesn't become a bad player overnight. There are things that affect all of that. And a lot of the times, KC talks about how it's the players versus the manager. So, you know, I don't know, like going into this game against Manchester City, I was saying that we should approach this like the FA Cup. What's in your preparation? What are you seeing? What are you looking at? What's your thread and your arc story-wise for this game this weekend?
Yeah, so I was actually, I did a little, I've just recently joined TikTok actually, which is quite fun. I've really been enjoying
it. Well done.
Yeah, do you know what? I always thought it was just for like kids singing and dancing. And someone actually said to me, you know what, you can actually do some quite like fun stuff on it, give it a go. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to try it. I joined about 3 or 4 weeks ago and I absolutely love it. And one of the things I'm doing, and the people seem to be really enjoying it, is kind of like day in the life of a reporter. And so actually just before I came on here, I sort of did like day in the life of how I prep for a game, because I think it's a lot of, you know, like, as you were saying, Sophie, like what do people do? And so I get my stat. I'm really, really lucky because I get an amazingly thorough stat pack, which I used to do all the stats myself and nobody actually told me about the stat pack. And I remember like trawling through all the games and going on Soccer Base and like writing everything down. And then suddenly I was like, oh my gosh, someone actually does this stuff and it's amazing. And I've got some, so I write down all my kind of like key angles, basically. And I think the Aubameyang one's quite interesting because obviously, you know, he came back and he scored a hat trick against Leeds, but then he's never, ever scored against Manchester City, which are in the league. Mm-hmm. There's lots of those stats actually for you where I have to remember to say in the league, because there's lots of like FA Cup that kind of.
Yeah, it's very different.
I think, you know, the fact that they're really kind of one-sided matches between these two sides. I think the last time you beat Man City was, I think Theo Walcott scored in that game. It was probably quite a few years ago. I forget the date now.
A long time ago.
And I just, yeah, so I basically sort of think, yeah, what am I looking at? I mean, you're going to hate me because I obviously the master and the apprentice is the big theme, but we are a bit bored of it, you're right. but yeah, sort of scene setty kind of stuff. And Saka, I think, is a big storyline for me as well. I'm really interested in him, whether he'll play him, whether he needs a rest. Because as you say, you know, he's only 19 years old, but when a player is so key to winning you matches, it's so difficult. You know, Ødegaard obviously is really interesting as well. It's great to see him. It's hard to know how much he's going to offer so far. We haven't seen enough of him, but he looks like a decent prospect, definitely. I think it's a really exciting, I think it should be a really exciting game. I'm hoping so. And I think, you know, we saw Manchester City getting a little bit of a scare, didn't we, against Everton. I thought anyway, I was like, oh, typical Everton, you know, they've had a couple of poor games lately. They lose to Fulham and then they're going to beat Manchester City. But then obviously City came back and steamroller their way.
Is Kevin De Bruyne going to start? Is he going to start, do you think, this weekend? He's back. He was on the bench, he and Aguero. Do you think they'll both start? What's your sense on that prepping for the game?
I'm hearing that Aguero is, as COVID has really floored him. It's really interesting, actually, because I wish I had these stats in front of me. Let me have a quick look in a minute when you guys are talking. But Aguero started like 1% of City's games or something ridiculous. It's like, you know, hardly, I think he started 2 or 3 games. But obviously he's had injury issues and then COVID. But I know personally from having COVID myself that I had it, you know, reasonably mildly. It was like a flu. I was ill for a couple of weeks. But then 3-4 months on, I still have breathing difficulties and heart palpitations. Now, if I'm a Premier League footballer, they're not going to want to highlight this, but I reckon in years to come, we're going to hear way more about it. I mean, Jamal Lascelles at Newcastle, he suffered long COVID. I think Aguero is really suffering, and I think he will come back at some point, but I don't know whether he's ready to start a game of such intensity.
Yeah, you have to be careful, don't you? I mean, anything that can affect the heart and your breathing is not good for a footballer. That's for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. It's scary. And like, you think you're fine. And I mean, I completely recovered. And then I'll go to bed one night and I'll suddenly be like, oh. And I say to my husband, listen to my heart. And he like gets up close to it. And it's like, boom, 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 boom. And then my breathing, I can't go up a flight of stairs. And if that's happening to you on a football pitch.
Yeah, no. And, they're not fit enough to play.
I mean, I'm not a young, fit footballer. So it's a bit different. But I'm not over the hill either. So I kind of think, you know, if it can affect me like that, how do we know exactly what's going on? But by the way, Phil Foden is obviously the story of Manchester City at the moment. I mean, he is...
What a player.
What a player. And I love the fact that he hung on, didn't he? Because so many players would have just got fed up and left. And I do think you've got to thank Pep for that, maybe even Arteta, like to say, listen, your time will come. You will get your time. Look at him now. I mean, he's absolutely shining and he's brilliant.
He and Saka have a lot of their stories are kind of parallel, aren't they, Alisson? In a sense,
they're two key guys, aren't they? They're two key players. But don't ever forget about Phil Foden. The key for Phil Foden, there was a natural passing of the torch, you know, with Silva. It was you know, David Silva. He'd been at the club 10 years. He'd done absolutely brilliant. And all that time, Phil Foden, obviously I knew Phil Foden when he was playing with my son at 7 years old. So I'd seen his rise come through. Fantastic young player. But, you know, when you start getting to the first team, they took their time with him. And sometimes these things do take time because he was only a slight kid. You know, didn't have any weight on him. There's not much on him now, but they took their time with him. And I think that's what you have to do. At times they wrapped him in cotton wool. And I know a lot of City fans were saying, you know, we need to give him a chance, need to give him a chance. But that passing of the torch has happened perfectly for Pep Guardiola and Man City.
Yeah, you're right. By the way, I love these comments that are coming up. This is such a great platform. But I just saw someone called Ian who said he's suffering from long COVID.
I just wished him well.
He's a Darlington fan as well, Alisson. He's a Darlington fan,
I love those Darlow fans because I got to cover a Darlington game earlier on in the season in the FA Cup and it was such fun. Like, it's just... just getting to know different fan bases, I just really enjoy.
It's really funny. We have, like, Darlington fans. We have QPR. Chelsea, West Ham, QPR dedicated fans that tune into the show. I think, Rangers, you know, we get guests from all sorts of different clubs, so... we've kind of, you know, created an affinity with certain fans and some of the London clubs as well. Let's talk about this game that's coming up because in the FA Cup, we've kind of owned Manchester City, Alisson. 2017, we beat City in your Chelsea. That must have been really hard. Sorry to bring that up in the final.
Sure, I love that stuff about Arsenal to be able to do that.
I'm sure you've had your fair share. You're gloating. And then, of course, last season's FA Cup final, both first finals for Arteta and Lampard as managers. And Arteta managed to win a trophy in a really horrendous year for the Arsenal. I was saying to the guys earlier today, too, if we can approach this like the FA Cup, we may have a chance. City are on, what, a 17 unbeaten game run? I think they've broken one Arsenal record. They may have one more to go. You can correct me on that. How do we how do we beat them? What is the answer here? And, you know, we've played the same team against Leeds we did in the Europa League. We're assuming there's going to be changes this weekend. What's Pep's approach to this? What are your thoughts going into the game?
Yeah, it's a good question, because we just know all about that beautiful word of momentum, don't we? And it's like, yeah, 17 wins in a row, and the amount unbeaten is even longer. And I think it's 10 Premier League games winning in a calendar year. So like the stats are just coming at you. I mean, it's amazing. And I think when you're on that kind of a roll and that sort of momentum, you almost, it just speaks for itself, doesn't it? You don't have to, I mean, obviously you're going to do your preparation on the team and all the rest of it, but I just have a feeling that they're going to be so full of confidence. And with Arsenal, I really like how you said that. I think that's a really good point to treat it. I know that managers go and say each game is the same and it doesn't really matter, but I disagree. And I think a game like this is a really important one, and to treat it like an FA Cup final is probably, mm-hmm. I think, a really good idea, because you can win. This is what I'm saying. This is so weird and it sounds really contradictory. Like, of course, on paper, it looks like Man City are going to win this one. But then, in the same breath, I wouldn't be that surprised if Arsenal did go and pull off some massive shock result kind of thing. And so it's really difficult preparing for a game like this. I just finished typing up, because I'm basically in lockdown with two kids. It's an absolute nightmare doing prep, trying to do prep with the kids and the homeschooling and stuff. So I'm now doing stuff when they're in bed. So basically I don't have a life at the moment at all. So I'll probably probably finish all my prep tonight. And do a little bit tomorrow as well. Get my husband to kind of do a shift tomorrow morning. But yeah,
thing is though, Ali, we play Benfica last night. We play City Sunday. We play Benfica Thursday. They've got to fly off Wednesday. Well, we must be going to Greece, is it, on Thursday, Wednesday? Then we play Leicester. We fly Tuesday. So it is constant. They're not even getting a day off, are they? So, and then on Sunday, we play Leicester at 12 o'clock, which we might as well just write off now. We don't win midday games. We just don't turn up. So for Arteta, it's going to be a tough choice on Sunday, because we really need to beat Benfica on Thursday. This is our home game on Thursday. They get an away goal.
That's so weird, though, isn't it? That you've got two away ridiculous. Games as your home games. I mean, why didn't they just do one leg, for goodness sake? We're in the middle of a pandemic. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I know. Making players, you know, fly out. Don't even start. We've all said this. He's going to have to be very choosy on Sunday. He's going to either go for it and put out a best 11, or he's going to think about Benfica.
I mean, presuming you call your best 11 the 11 that started against Leeds and Benfica.
Well,
no, because there's no Thomas Partey starting or Kieran Tierney, so it wouldn't be the best 11. But
I don't know if you'll have Tierney starting. I don't know. He's been out such a long time.
He is so key, though,
isn't he? When I'm looking at the sort of when he plays, how important he is to the team.
Him and Saka are so important to the team, it's a joke.
Well, look, you guys, you're listening to the Highbury Squad. It's Lockdown Series, Volume 2, Episode 31. We have Alison Bender. You can follow her at Ali Bender TV. She does great stuff for various networks. Brilliant broadcaster, presenter, and sports journalist. We've got some questions coming in for you, Alison. So we want to get to those, because we know, like, you're a busy lady and you've got a lot of stuff going on. I got to ask you this, and you had and it leads into the first question that we have for you, by the way.
Okay.
You had an exchange that went viral. It didn't just go viral, it went all over the world. You woke up and you were like, wow, I'm on TV in China and South America and Australia and Africa and everywhere in Europe. You asked
Is that right?
Yes, you did. And Newman Salih here says, Alison, do you think some reporters in press conferences should be asking better and more relevant questions? You asked a direct question that was very relevant, considering the transfer of Gareth Bale to Tottenham, and you were met with a scolding response from Jose. Can you take us into that moment a little bit and talk us through that, and then you can answer Newman's question here?
Yeah, happy to. So that was a Chelsea-Tottenham game, Tottenham-Chelsea, which is, you know, bitter rivalry. Tottenham have just lost. Jose Mourinho comes out to speak to me, which is an obligation. He has to speak to the broadcast. And I knew he was in a foul mood already. And I asked all the regular questions. And my very final question I just sort of thought I'd been given the kind of the nod. So just so you know, when you've basically asked enough, someone usually taps you on the shoulder or you get a press right. officer staring at you.
Yeah.
And so I said, oh, Jose, can I just ask one little question? And my little question, yeah, is what caused all the problem. And I just said, I'm just curious. I tried to ask it in as nice a manner as I could. I was just like, you know, you were only 1-0 down. You had substitutions left. Why didn't you bring off on Gareth Bale? And his response was just funny because he said, good question, but you don't deserve an answer. Mm. And I was completely taken aback, to be honest with you, because the fact that he said good question, I thought, oh, great, you know, he's going to give me an answer. And to be fair, I'd actually almost given him an opportunity because I had a feeling he wanted to talk about this because Bale had sucked against Brighton and Hove Albion. And I think I got the feeling that Mourinho kind of wanted to say, you know, he's not good enough and, you know, maybe it wasn't his decision to bring him in, whatever. Anyway, I asked the question and it was actually really embarrassing. It sounded totally sycophantic because I just went, oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Jose. But I was almost so stunned. I didn't even have the voice to say, sorry, why don't I deserve an answer, which I normally would have done. Mm-hmm. I think it was because I'd asked the extra question. Anyway, it was crazy because I looked like left and right to see what everyone had made of it. And because of COVID, everyone's like 3 meters away, so no one had heard. And I said to some of my colleagues, you just told me I don't deserve an answer. Now, just for context, I know Jose Mourinho really, really well. I worked at Chelsea TV for years with him. I traveled to Ghana with him on a charity trip with Michael Essien. I sat in a hotel bar with him for an hour chatting to him on pre-season. So, you know, we know each other. And so I thought, what have I done to upset him? It felt very personal, to be honest, it did. Mm. And so I actually decided to go and seek out the press officer. I wouldn't normally take this in personally.
Is that Simon?
Simon Felstein, yeah. Exactly. Really nice guy.
Yeah, he's
a good guy. I thought, you know what? I'm just not going to have this awkwardness the next time I have to face Jose. So I said, Sly, can you come over and, you know, what's all this about? Anyway, long story short, first of all, he actually ended up having a bit of a go at me, which I was a bit annoyed about. He said I shouldn't have put it on Twitter in the first place. And I said, well, you know, I only wrote what Jose said to me. Then he calmed down a bit and he said, listen, I'll have a chat with Jose. And he did. And apparently Jose had actually come up to him and said, listen, what I said to Alison, I actually didn't mean it to come out like that. He said, apparently, I know her, I like her. So I was like, okay, good. I think what he was trying to say, apparently, I don't know, was that no one deserves an answer like that. It's kind of up to me. I'm the manager. I make the decisions, which is kind of fair enough as well. Like, he shouldn't have to explain.
He should have said that then, shouldn't he?
Well, exactly. I think it's all bollocks. Sorry.
Yeah,
I think he meant what he said. It's a good question, but you don't deserve an answer because you just don't. And how dare you ask him something like that? The only way I saw it is when you put it on Twitter and you got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of replies. I'm like, what's she done? What's happened? And when I saw it, listen, I'm no great fan of his. You are. It's a different situation. You were close to him at Chelsea. I get that. You know, it's a little bit like Wenger with us. I get that. I've got no allegiance and I can't stand the man. I actually think he's downright rude. And to say that to you, I'm glad you put it on Twitter. I'm glad people got to see it, to be honest, because who does he think he is saying that?
I thought it was a disgrace, PG,
it's
to be
just
honest.
Do you know what?
It was a disgrace, Alison.
But the thing is, Kev, listen to me, Kev. You know, if I told you one manager was going to say that to Alisson or anybody, you would have said to me straight away, that's Mourinho.
Yeah.
No one else would have spoken like that. I can't think of
Klopp. Pep and Klopp have their moments. They can be a bit sarcastic.
Yeah.
Pep can be very sarcastic. Like, and oh my gosh.
Passive-aggressive. Like, passive-aggressive.
Yeah. Pep, even in his press conference today, whoever was the first reporter, I can't actually think who it was, but Pep was not happy with him. He had his head down. There was some terrible, like, you can really read into that kind of
vibes.
Language,
the vibes, the vibes,
totally.
Yeah.
And it is.
It's not classy.
It's not. You know what? I think sometimes people don't realize how difficult it is because when you're in those press conferences, you may have prepared for what you're going to ask, but then you read the room. And based on the manager's mood, you've got to switch it up. And you've got to be prepared to do that in a heartbeat. And it could even happen in seconds, can't it, Alison, where someone asks a question, the manager reacts in a certain way, and you're already holding the mic because you're the next question. And you're like, holy shit, I've got to flip this now. I've got to move in a different direction. And I think that's what people sometimes don't realize is harder. you know, as harder the press are criticized, it's not as easy as it seems always.
And also, Alison, every Tottenham fan would have wanted you to ask that question.
Well, that's what I thought. And I, you know, that is my job, to ask what the fans want. And do you know what? I can take it. And the thing is, it was actually quite nice to be part of a pile-on like that that wasn't against me, because I've also been on the other end of one where it's nasty and it's vile and it's all about me. I mean, of course, I did get loads of those thousands, you know, loads of people said it was a stupid question, I'm a stupid girl, don't know about football, blah, blah, blah.
No, rubbish.
Generally speaking, people were actually quite nice to me, and I went to bed feeling exhausted, actually, but emotionally exhausted, but not in a negative way. Whereas there have been times where, oh my gosh, I've gone to bed in tears, because it's like, it just gets so overwhelming when you hear that many people criticizing. And, you know, Sophie, as you say, it's a really hard job. People don't realize, because I'm the same. When I see, like, I don't know, Des Kelly or Jeff Shreves ask a question, and sometimes it's not perfect, you kind of think, oh, how hard is it to ask three questions to a manager and they're always the same? But it's weird, actually, because when you're on that spot, I tell you, your questions change so many times. So when I had Saka, I was like, do I ask him about the penalty decisions? And then your mind flips. Oh, but actually, I really want to ask him about Odegaard. Oh, but then I also really desperately want to hear what he thinks of Aubameyang, and why he scores and sometimes misses chances. And this is all going around in your head, and you've only got three questions and you've got a couple of minutes. Sometimes you have more, gauging the situation. And the other thing is, do you respond to something that they've answered with and carry on with that, but that exactly. the extent of something that you have to go further on? And then if you don't get there, everyone thinks you're stupid, because why on earth did she not mention the hat trick?
So it is
hard. And you,
do you know what? I'd last 5 minutes in that job. Oh my God. Can you imagine me being told
not
what
even
I can
five
and can't
minutes?
Not even 5 minutes. Just,
and the worst thing is, when, I mean, we do post game shows, Alison, 5 minutes after. And if we've lost, we are fuming. So I understand it must be, if anyone came up to us, I'd be livid as well, you know, and it must be very, very hard. I wouldn't want that job.
I love it though. Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I remember being actually, I don't get nervous, but when Mourinho was here with United, thinking, am I really prepared to ask him this question? And did. And Wenger was a little easier, I think. He has a little bit more, but he could get prickly too towards the end and stuff. And Pep, you know, was just riding on a high with City when they were here. So you could ask something so innocuous, and before you know it, they're jumping down your throat. I want to get to this question from Virginia for you, Alison. Hi, Alison. Do you agree with Pep when he said we will be challenging for titles in the near future with Arteta in charge? Is he just being polite because he loves Arteta?
Well, if Pep said it, then I can only agree with him, because I think he's absolutely, you know, he's a sensational manager. No, I mean, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because obviously, you know, what are you down in 10th right now? But I think that Pep said, and I think it's very true, is that there have been a lot of games where you've definitely been the better side and just not got the results. And that's frustrating. But then when you've got a bit of the icing on the cake, so if you're creating chances, but that you're just not putting them away, and that is frustrating for a manager because you've kind of done your job. And then perhaps, I don't know, Aubameyang comes back into the side and goes on a scoring run. And, you know, Saka's obviously been so good in creation as well. And things start to kind of click, and you go on a bit of a run. As we've seen from Manchester United, how quickly that can sort of the table can change around. I'm not suggesting this season you're going to do too much, but, you know, adding a few key players over the next few years, I mean, yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, you should be title challengers again. I don't know how far off you are from that. I don't know.
We'll know in the summer, Alison.
If he's backed, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's another question. I think I'm trying to find it up here, but they wanted to ask you, Alison, do you think it's going to be an underachievement for Pep this season if he doesn't win the Premier League?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about the Champions League, isn't it? Really?
Oh, sorry, the Champions League.
Oh, you meant the Champions League, yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely be an underachievement if they now go on to lose the Premier League as well, which, by the way, I think could also happen. Like, I know that they're, 10 points clear now, 14 games to go. But if you think about that, 14 games, that's a lot of points at stake and a lot of opportunity for players to pick up injuries, for example. And we've got, you know, so many games. We've got the Euros coming up. You wonder whether some of those players might start taking their foot off the gas towards the end of the season a little bit with one eye on Euros. You just never know. But yeah, Champions League, obviously, they desperately want that, don't they? And it has been something, you know, that has been a little bit of an obsession for City. I mean, I wouldn't say it was an underachievement, because I do think with Champions League, as you all know, it's a little bit of, there's always a little bit of luck. I mean, the year that Chelsea won it, I don't necessarily think, I think that we had better seasons in the Champions League where we probably should have won it. The John Terry slip season, for example, in Moscow. I just thought we were absolutely nailed on. You know, the time when Iniesta scored that goal at Stamford Bridge that put Chelsea out. You need talent, you need really good consistency, but you do need that little bit of luck as well. And so if, for example, a little bit of luck is not on their side, or they, you know, they kept coming up against Barcelona, didn't they, City, for so many seasons, that wasn't particularly lucky. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's an underachievement, but I definitely think it's something that he needs to do sometime soon with City.
Thing is, Alison, there's no fast track in the Champions League. There is no fast track. You have to earn your Spurs to get that under your belt. You really do.
Al, can I just ask you a question? You've interviewed a lot of managers. Who's your favourite and who's the worst? Apart from Mourinho, obviously, but who's the worst?
Oh, that's a great question. Why have I never been asked that? Can't I think of an answer off the top of my head? I mean, crikey, over the years as well, I've worked under so many managers, even within one club, so like Chelsea. There were so many. I loved Carlo Ancelotti. I love that man. He is such a great... He's a great manager. He's a great man. And I love the fact that of all the things he's won, he's so incredibly modest and very laid back. And he's got that inner confidence where he doesn't have to show off, right? That's why he won't abuse reporters or lose his rag, because he's got this quiet inner confidence of, I've been there. I've done it. I'm trying my best. And actually, I think he's doing a really good job with Everton, who are, you know, a little bit like Arsenal at times in their inconsistency. But we have seen some really good stuff from them this season that I definitely put down to Carlo. I've actually got his autobiography somewhere up there, and I wish I'd read it before I worked with him. I actually read it afterwards, because I understood a lot more about him as a person after I'd read it. And it's he's obsessed with food and drink, and he's really classic Italian, loves his food. And you know, he was joking about how he can't really do anything right in football until he's well fed.
Well watered.
And it's just, you know, and I like that there is something about him outside of football as well, because we see a lot of managers who are so obsessed, which is great, but it's almost like you can start to lose it a bit if you don't have something else. I heard that about Wenger, to be fair. I heard that he had nothing else, but I don't know if that's so true. I think he was
he was football mayor. But who's the worst? Yeah. Not just Chelsea, anyone that you've interviewed.
I mean, the monosyllabic footballers aren't great. I'm trying to think of who I mean, but I suppose some of the younger ones who just aren't very media trained and don't give you a great answer.
This follows up from that, Barry. Alison, what player? Because I think players give the worst interviews. Managers are so much more interesting because they're a little bit vanilla. But then everyone was lauding James Maddison from Leicester. For the interview that he gave. But it's always so cliche from most footballers, because you get better interviews from footballers after they've stopped playing versus when they are playing.
Yeah, there's a few that stand out. I mean, Troy Deeney was absolutely brilliant with me, and he was just really honest. He spoke to me a lot about, he said that he had some real sort of anger management issues within himself. A lot of it came from Twitter and people abusing his family. He told me that he'd lost a bit of love for football. I think he was actually getting at the fact that he'd suffered a bit of depression as well, though he didn't call it that as such. Very open, very honest. I just really, really love that. Someone like Petr Cech was always great to interview, because he always comes out and speaks to you, even if he makes a complete howler. And I love that. I mean, that takes real character from a player to come and admit their own mistakes. John Terry I used to like as well, because he was just, oh my gosh, I mean, he'd have a massive go at me sometimes, be like, you should know better to ask a question like that or whatever. But he was properly in charge of that team at the time.
But I can ask you about John Terry. I mean, we don't get a great perspective of him, but what actually is he like?
he just loves football. And you know what? What a brilliant captain of that. I mean, we talk about teams that lack captaincy.
Leadership.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, so Manchester United, Arsenal, there's a few teams out there that could do with some leaders. And I tell you what, when I was working for Chelsea TV, around that era of, I don't know, 2007, 2008, where you've got the captains of so many countries. You've got John McElobi of Nigeria. You've got Michael Essien of Ghana. You've got John Terry of England. You've got Petr Cech of the Czech Republic. You've got Michael Ballack of Germany. Probably Branislav Ivanovic as well, right? There's so many of them. And to be able to keep all of them happy at one time, Mourinho did a brilliant job. But I also just think, like, that just to see that chest out leadership from so many players at the same time just was massively impressive.
What Arsenal haven't had, Alisson, for years and years. That's been the biggest beef
since Vieira.
Who's the biggest leader now? I would in the dressing room, yeah. David Luiz. He has an influence, which is why I think Arteta wants to keep him
on. Lacazette's got quite a good.
I quite like Bellerin actually, but I don't know whether he's. I don't know. He kind of leads by example.
Think he leads by example off the pitch in terms of how to be a good human and how to handle yourself. And on the pitch, he's a little bit weak sauce. I think Kieran Tierney is growing into a leader.
Leno's a bit quiet, actually. I interviewed him, and although I liked him a lot, he seemed a bit shy.
Who? Sorry, Alison?
Leno.
I felt like there was a sort of a shyness. And like when I look at goalkeepers of other teams, they're a lot more, you know, shouty.
Brash.
And
there's a brash. There's a brashness. Yeah.
He's quite withdrawn. But he's
still a great player, but it's just if you're judging on that sort of leadership qualities, and obviously some of the younger players, I mean, you don't expect them to lead. Xhaka, I wanted to talk to you because last time I came on your show, you were all sort of Xhaka hating, but
maybe not me.
How do
you
feel about him now?
I'll let Casey and Amanda answer that one.
Well, I think he's improved. I've got to say, I still don't want him at the football club, and because I don't think he's going to take us forward, but he has improved. I've got to say that because he has played better.
Yeah,
he plays better with Partey. That's for sure.
He wasn't so great the other night, but he has definitely improved and he's definitely helping, but he's not good enough for the long term. But I agree with what Kev says. I didn't want him to ever play for our club again when he threw his shirt on the ground and did all that. Unfortunately, I'm old school, Alison. And, you know, and then when he got all the abuse on social media, which was absolutely disgraceful and disgusting, and that's the only downside, really, with social media and football is this abuse. It's so disgusting. But to be fair, he's played better this season. He has definitely improved. I don't know if that's Partey and I don't know if that's Arteta. But he obviously has a great relationship with Arteta because he plays him. When he's fit, he's playing. So
David Luiz, he can make mistakes on the pitch, Alison, but behind the scenes in the dressing room, he is a leader. He's very well respected. He's one of those players that the other players just love. You know, and so he's had a positive effect on them. But yeah, if we want to be challenging in the Premier League, we all know that, you know, the keepers for us are Kieran Tierney, Thomas Partey, Gabriel, Saka, ESR, Martinelli. You know, Aubameyang needs to pull his stocks up a little bit more. Lacazette could be sold in the summer. But those are the players, you know, that are keepers. I think everyone's willing to hear offers for Bellerin. They're willing to hear offers for Elneny, Xhaka, Chambers. You know, there's still that evolution to happen at the club, and the summer transfer window, like Casey said earlier this season, is really important. Do you think, and the questions come in, by the way, Niagara Falls Guna says they loved your ESPN shows from our listeners here in the US. Do you think Arsenal can, where do you see us finishing the Premier League, and do you think we can win the Europa League?
So where would you finish in the Premier League? I mean, I think you should, the aim should always be Champions League football. It always should be. But the problem is there's so many extra teams now involved. There was always the sort of the traditional teams going for that race. And now, you know, you look at West Ham, for example, there's like teams up there. So it is difficult. So I guess, you know, Europe in some form is where you should be aiming every season. And can you win the Europa League? Well, you know, you've spoken about cup games that you just are better at. Maybe that's what Arteta almost needs to prioritize. I mean, you can't not prioritize the league when you're Arsenal, to be honest, because, and it's funny, Kev, you were saying about this, but we still look at Arsenal, all journalists, fans, everyone who's in the game, we still look at Arsenal as traditional big four, right? We can't help it. It's ingrained within us. And at what point is someone going to go, Alisson, they're not. They're just
Do you know what, Alisson? We're not even the big eight, let alone the big four.
Well, yeah,
we're just not.
We're still a big club. We've lost our pedigree in the Premier League, and we've lost our identity, our DNA, and our culture, and we're trying to rebuild that now. I think, you know, we talk about it a lot with Kevin in terms of the Arsenal that we once were versus the new Arsenal. I mean, you know, it's happened to, look, Chelsea became a new team when Abramovich took over. You know, even actually when Gianluca Vialli was manager, you know, they started winning cups and they were in the League Cup and, you know, they started evolving. City became, they were an irrelevant team. They were, we spoke to Sean Gotter on the show. He was in the second division before he even got to the Premier League. And so, you know, for us, I think we're in that evolutionary period. And the biggest question is, who do Arsenal really want to be? And I think for a lot of us, we're going to find that out in the summer in terms of the investment that we make and what we do as a club. So we've been lost, and we're hoping we get found pretty quickly.
Alisson,
yeah.
Do you, as a journalist, do Arsenal games, and you obviously hear what Arsenal fans say and like and tweet. Do you think there's an arrogance at Arsenal? We are not where we should be, that's for sure. But there's been quite a bit of fans kicking off when we're getting linked with certain players from opposition clubs. And here's the funny thing. We get linked with the players. They're not good enough for Arsenal. Then when the players go and do well elsewhere, our club said, well, why didn't we sign? Look at what's going on at that club. You know, do you think there's an arrogance with some Arsenal fans, or what's your thoughts as a journalist?
I really like that question. It's really interesting, actually, because I suppose when you put it like that, I guess you could say that it is, but I've never seen it as an arrogance. I think that it's a hangover from what you've always been, and it takes us a really long time to update our consciousness, our psyche of what your club is all about. You know, for example, like when I was a Chelsea fan, and you know, we didn't win stuff, and we weren't expected to win stuff, and then suddenly Abramovich takes over, and you know, you're a completely different entity, but you're still that same person. So you know, and I guess cycles can update very quickly. So, you know, like you say, depending on what happens in the summer, because you do have a bedrock of some really good some really good players, actually. You've got a good spine, or, you know, there are decent players there. There's definitely a few that need to move on. I was surprised, actually, that you put Bellerin in there as well, because I thought he was pretty loved by the fans, and journalists seem to be quite impressed with him. But is he's one of the ones that you'd like to see go, you think?
We love him as a person, but
we're finished.
As a player. I think we need a right back, and we need cover for Tierney as well, because he's a little bit injury prone, you know. So as great as he is, and everyone says, oh, he's future Arsenal captain. We've got the spine, like you say. We've got a good goalkeeper. Yeah. We've got a couple of really good centre backs. We need a right back. We need cover at left back. We need a partner for Thomas Partey. You could argue that depending on what happens with Martin Odegaard and Real Madrid, we need that creative player, that spark. ESR, Kev says all the time, you can't put this on the shoulders of ESR. Like Chelsea, there was a lot of pressure on Mason Mount, right? You put a lot of pressure on these players. And then we've even talked about on our show last week that we need a striker.
Yeah.
You know? Really? Well, that's the thing. You don't have a consistent, you don't have a 20 goals a season
we
striker.
We did. Until he signed a contract. And then, I don't know, behind the scenes, obviously
he's gone through a tough time.
He's gone through a tough time,
and sometimes it does happen. We'd have a bad season. We don't like it, but it does happen.
What, a whole bad season, Kev?
No, it's not. What are you talking about? The season ain't finished.
No, I know, but well, yeah. I hope.
No, you said the whole bad season. The season.
The chance. No. Hold on.
He scored a hat trick in his last.
Yeah.
He scored five goals in his last two games.
Kev, you just said a striker can go through a whole season. I've never known a bad striker to go through a whole season.
No, he could have a tough season. The team hasn't been performing. The striker hasn't been performing. It can happen. That's my point. It can happen. My issue with the striker, Alison, is that there's times where we do get down the pitch and we put crosses in, but we got nobody to head it. In there to head it. So
I've seen so many games like that. And it, again, I feel for Arteta, because it's like that final touch, you know. But, you know, as someone just said, Aubameyang could still score 20 goals. Mm. What's he on now? I'm not sure what he's on now, but
it's not many. I just want to switch it up slightly, just going back to your career and everything. I've been going to football for over 45 years, and I swear I've never, ever, ever in all my years encountered sexism. I never have. I joined social media, still didn't really get it, got it occasionally, and I sent you the meme that I use when occasionally someone will say, go back to the kitchen. And I don't get aerated or anything. I just answer them with sarcasm because I think that's the best way to do it. So obviously I'm not in the media though. So what's it like? When you got started, did you encounter sexism?
So when I first started, to be honest, I went over to Real Madrid. I was working in La Liga and I didn't experience sexism at all there because I was very much a presenter. I was a producer and a presenter. I'd been sent out to actually launch the club channel from scratch as a exec producer. And so all of my work wasn't really judged about whether I was male or female. It was just whether I could do the job to launch the channel. And then I was on that club channel as well. But this was back in the time before social media. I didn't, you know, it was in a different country, so I didn't really get to see it. So I didn't experience any of that. And it was only when I actually came back to England when I started to see it. And particularly, you know, English, I have to say, we are not a nice country in the fact that we build with everyone, with footballers, with celebrities. We love someone, we build them up, we put them on a better pedestal, and then we shoot them down, we knock them down, and we're horrible. And, you know, someone just said, we embrace women here. And it's like, I'm afraid, do you know what? The majority of people do, it's true. But there is a very small minority, and they are a loud minority on Twitter, unfortunately, when they want to be. And it's that whole thing that they, you know, the big pile on, because when one person says something, it kind of makes everyone realize it's okay to say that. And so you can end up being quite abusive. I mean, I gave this example actually on another podcast the other day. I'd forgotten about it. But, you know, when I was on Sky Sports News, people might not remember, but this is years ago, I used to be a newsreader on Sky Sports News. And I remember I was very, very new to the job and very nervous, and I went on air and I did my thing, and I stupidly read the comments section below, and someone said, oh my goodness, have you seen this new girl on Sky Sports? She looks like she's had a stroke. Look at the way she talks out of one side of her mouth. And then all of the, it wasn't just, so one comment is fine, but then loads of people piling on, oh my God, you're right, I'm watching her now, look at her. And then one guy's like, oh, I'd shag her from the right hand side, but definitely not from the left. And it was vile. So anyway, I came off, I'm reading this stuff, and then I said to my boyfriend at the time, like, do I speak out of one side of my mouth? Do I look like I've had a stroke? What's going on? I look in the mirror and it turns out I do. And I've never noticed it in my life, right? And you're all going to watch me now. I sort of do this a bit. Anyway, how sad and vile that some petty thing that someone said has actually now made me incredibly paranoid. So I'm a brand new presenter on Sky and I go on to my next shift and I'm trying desperately to look symmetrical because I'm thinking everyone's staring at my mouth. And so then, of course, I'm not thinking about what I'm saying. I'm not thinking about, I'm just thinking everyone's
You're more worried about how you look.
Which is so stupid. I mean, now I wouldn't care what people say, but when you're young and you're just trying to do your best, it really hurts. And it's like,
you know what?
Last thing you think about.
So interesting you say that, because when I started podcasting, I was on AFTV for a couple of years. And the first thing Robbie said to me when we recorded our first show, I'd never done anything like it, went, don't read the comments. And I went, why would anyone comment about me? Why are they interested in me? He went, seriously, Amanda, do not read the comments. Well, when someone says that to you, what are you going to do? First thing I did was go and read the comments. And I was shocked, because I was very loved on my podcast in when I did it years ago. I was on this little podcast. Everyone loved me and that was that. So I just assumed it would be like that. No. The first time it was get her off. She's this. It just went on and on. And the next podcast, exactly like you said, I didn't do something that they tell me not to do. I was quite stiff. I wasn't myself. And then someone said, why is she on there? She doesn't even speak. You cannot win. So on the third podcast, I said, fuck it. I'm just going to be me. You can't please all of the people all of the time. And I stopped reading the comments.
And the worst thing I ever did, and I was so stupid. I was hosting a live match on ITV and I read the comments while I was on air.
Oh my God.
I think during the ad break. And oh my gosh, like you're panicking then because you're like, you know, I've said this and they didn't like that and they didn't like the way that I said this, so I've got to change it, or I pronounced one of their players wrong or something. And it's just like, you're right, you just don't listen to it. And you know, I guess everyone suffers kind of, it's a difficult job and you learn the hard way. But I think the one thing about being female is you're often judged about the way you look particularly.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
it happens at every level too. I mean, I was just watching the Britney Spears documentary and the way she was, you know, treated versus how, say, you know, Justin Timberlake was. And, you know, you look at all of the women in media, they're judged by their looks and their size. But I will say that because of some men as well, Alison, I was given an opportunity to talk about football, especially here in the United States. A couple of really good guys that gave me the opportunity. And then we have someone like Kevin on the show who completely supports women and champions women. And I feel like, you know, there are some really good men out there that enjoy women talking about football, give them the opportunity, as well as in this world, unfortunately, you know, look at the players suffering from racism right now and sexism and all of it. I mean, it's a disgrace. And what I like is the players are actually posting this all up and showcasing it. I just really wanted to get your opinion quick too on Zaha's comments about the ineffectiveness, how he believes on kneeling. And I wanted to get Kev's perspective on this too, because I think each person goes through their own journey and their story. You as a woman, Amanda, myself, Kevin as a black man, you know, we all have individual stories in terms of how it affects us. What are your thoughts on all of that, and what social media is or isn't doing about racism and sexism overall?
Yeah, it's a really strange one, actually, because when I first heard about a few clubs now deciding not to take the knee anymore, it kind of made me sad because I thought we were getting somewhere with that. And there's been so much vile racism lately, but at least we're talking about it and we're trying to do things. We're trying to get social media companies to change. We're putting pressure on them as well. I always remember doing an interview with Lukaku, and he said to me ages before anyone was talking about it, he actually said, I'm going to walk off the pitch the next time. And I remember saying that was quite a kind of a scoop. I was like, really, you would do that without having the permission of the Premier League or the permission of the manager? And he just said, yeah, of course I would. I would just. And then I think then when he went to Inter, it actually happened. And I don't think he did walk, because the problem is it's such a tricky one for players, because it, you know, when you're having an interview and you're rational and you're sitting there and you're planning something, is very different when you're subjected at the actual time. And, you know, you could never know the exact situation. But I suppose the players that are saying they don't want to take the knee, they would rather do it another way because they're feeling it's ineffective. That's their very own stance and their own stand to try and combat it. So I suppose it can only be praised. But then you don't want it to be taken as a negative thing. So it's a tricky one, isn't it?
What do you think, Kev?
Whether players stand or kneel or don't kneel, it doesn't matter. The big problem is still there. So if someone thinks it's not effective anymore, they don't have to do it. The people who want to do it, let them do it. The people who don't want to do it, everyone's individuals here. And, you know, whether you stand or you're not, and you're both black, or you both suffered racism, or you've both been through it, then you've got this. It's the same. It's no different. The one kneeling isn't better than the one standing, and vice versa. For me, what I look at is definitely, what are these companies going to do about it? What are these platforms going to do about it?
Nothing, unfortunately.
They're going to do nothing about it. Yeah. So, you know, there's all this, you know, the Premier League and the FA and all that. What changes there? Because you know what? When I grew up, it was there. Now I'm retired, my son's playing, and it's still there. And we're still talking about it. And we're still going through the narrative of whether it's a knee or whether it's this or that. It doesn't matter. It's what are the people in power going to do? And they don't do anything. So
what do you think about this question? I throw it out there before we get you out on this, Alison, because you've been with us over an hour, and it's not Sophie time, by the way. It's just Alison time. Right,
Alison
now.
Time. I want to hear about her podcast as well.
Yes, and we're gonna have Alison let us know where she can. Excuse me, that's the hotline. That's Arteta calling. He's just giving me the team news for Sunday. Alison, do you think some pundits initiate these abuses indirectly or unconsciously when they criticize players on TV? Some have said it about, YouTube channels and platforms inciting it. I just think if you're a bad person, you're a bad person. You know, you can't, Roy Keane is Roy Keane. He's going to give his criticism. Does he want to incite violence? I don't think so. Kevin and Amanda and I talk on this podcast. We give our opinion. We don't want that to be translated negatively in the sense of, giving people permission to be bad. I think if you're a bad person, you're going to be that person. What do you think about Virginia's question?
I forget what the question was. Sorry, I was really interested in what you were saying. do they initiate the abuse?
Yeah, yeah. The platforms, yeah.
I don't know. I don't exactly understand that question. I mean,
like if Rio Ferdinand goes at, say, that they were attacking Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Graham Souness,
Pogba, for instance,
yeah, where he kept at him. Does that then incite abuse for Pogba or?
Yeah, no, I mean, I suppose it does to an extent, because the problem is these pundits and these, presenters like Gary Lineker, for example, they are in incredibly privileged positions where people listen, really, really listen to them. And I always think that if they say something and they behave a certain way, then everyone thinks it's kind of okay. And so obviously, you've all got to have your own minds and you've got to decide whether you want to be a good person or not. But I do think that you can encourage that sheep mentality when everyone kind of piles on together, for sure. So I do think people need to be a little bit careful. I mean, I think it's absolutely fine when, you having discussions like this and you might say something opinionated about a player. I think that's very different. But I think it's, there's a difference between an opinion and sort of like a wave of hatred, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But when Gary Lineker said that about Wenger, shouldn't have done it. He's in too much of a... We can do it on a small podcast like this, but someone of that stature, I'm sorry, you shouldn't have done it. And I think sometimes he misreads situations that he should be very careful about as well. Sometimes it's not easy. We're all human. We all say things that we shouldn't say. But if you are in that position, you've got to be careful. So I sort of get that. I think they have a responsibility.
And I love this, because Beckham was definitely there. About building someone up and
absolutely
then kicking while they were down at his lowest. Raheem Sterling, the way his headlines work, and Rashford's compared to others, really. There's an accountability here for sure.
But Soph, can you imagine if there was social media when Beckham did what Beckham did in the World Cup? I actually think it would have been a million times worse.
Yeah,
it was bad enough.
And it's when they go at their families as well. I think that's really vile. I think Arteta spoke about it recently as well, didn't he? But Ashley Cole, I think, is another really... I feel desperately sad for Ashley Cole, because I think he's one of the best left backs in the world, and I feel that 100%. He has, I don't think he quite has that footballing respect because of other things that he should. I think that, because he was obviously married to the nation's sweetheart and everything that happened with Cheryl Cole, that was one thing. Even take that story about, do you remember when he got the air rifle and he shot I actually can't quite believe that story. I was speaking with Paul McCarthy who was at the News of the World and got the scoop on that story, actually, and he held on to it for a whole week because he couldn't believe it could possibly be true, because no one would be that stupid. But I got to know Ashley Cole actually quite well at Chelsea, and I honestly think he is a very thoroughly nice guy. Like, you know, of course, they're footballers that, like any human, they have good and bad sides. But I just think he took a...
Oh, your mic went off. No.
No.
What's unplugged the bugger. You're in the middle of a really good story right
now.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Nope, we lost you.
Oh, no. Where's she gone? Just
completely cut out.
Hey, how about there you now?
Go. Yes.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
carry on.
Maybe your headphones are doing something weird. I think I'm actually working on doing a really nice sit down interview with him, hopefully one day, if he says yes, to kind of go through that whole process of, you know, he was wanted by Real Madrid at the time, and apparently he actually didn't go. He told me he didn't go because of Cheryl. She didn't want to move abroad. So, you know, that's a big sacrifice that he made for his career.
Wow.
For her.
Yeah. You know, Alison, he's a very look, I know Arsenal fans are upset with him about the book and what he said and all those things, but I covered him when he moved to LA for LA Galaxy. And I tell you, he's a very underappreciated, but also misunderstood person. He was very nice, very cordial, always had time. Even after he stopped playing for LA Galaxy, he came to a game and he was like, oh, hello, how are you? So, you know, for me, I think he's exactly the type of player, a little bit like, you know, wanted to stay at Arsenal, but didn't really see the ambition in the club, and then was honest about how he felt about it. And then, you know, now people want to have a go at him. And also, you know what, for me, he's the best left back that's ever played in the Premier League.
Right.
Period.
So yeah, I 100%, if you don't rate him as the best left back, you don't know your football. But I'm sorry, he didn't stay for money. It was nothing else. He was promised £5,000 more and he didn't get it. He's even put it in his book. So all this about he went for footballing reasons, I'm sorry he didn't. I don't know him at all. I've never met him.
Amanda. Look at what he won at Chelsea. He was
what he won. He was going to stay. Oh, he was promised £5,000. He didn't get it. He left. It was about money. And that's why he's called what he's called.
I think it's a comparison rather than the money, because I can understand. I read his book. It's painful, to be honest with you. There's bits of it that it felt very whingy, to be honest. That whole 5K ran my car off the road thing. It was very defensive. I didn't enjoy that aspect of it. But I think rather than the money itself, it's that comparison thing, because you've got to understand. It's almost like when you know what your colleagues are on, and you know your worth, and you know what you are as a player, which he does, and we've all sat here and said he's the best left back in the Premier League.
Absolutely.
And so how frustrating must that be that someone's not willing to stump up for you? So I can understand it to an extent, but I think whoever was advising him from a PR perspective did it so badly, exactly, labelled as a money grabber, and that was it. It stuck, and it must be very difficult.
That's the club. That's the club for you.
Yeah, that was the club's fault.
That's the club, because remember, that is when the culture started to change.
Yeah.
The culture at the club. Because if you're going to keep your best players, you have to pay them.
And let alone he was promised it, Kev, and then it was taken from him. It's just a joke.
Listen, you cannot separate the two. They are together. If you're going to keep your best players, you have to pay them. The problem was Arsenal weren't going to pay them because they were breaking up that squad. They were breaking it up. And that's why you saw everybody start to leave after that, because they weren't going to pay them. They weren't going to keep them.
And it's such hypocrites. Of course, someone comes in for you, offers you more money, you go to a bigger network, or you do something different. PG, you've just switched jobs. I mean, this is part of life. You know, this happens. And I think sometimes, because footballers earn so much, there's a little jealousy involved in it too. And yeah, did he handle it well? No. But did he deserve to move for, you know, look what he's achieved? You can't argue with that. He would never have done that if he'd have stayed at Arsenal.
Sophie, one thing I will say about the fans, because the fans don't know what's going on the inside, you can only take it for face value what goes on and what comes out and what media. Because remember, the media feed the masses. So when you know he's he's come through the ranks at Arsenal. He's in Arsenal's team. He's part of the Invincibles, etc. As far as you're concerned, he should be jumping at the chance to stay for the club, to stay at the club. The fact of the matter is there's more moving parts than the fans see.
Yeah.
But the fans see that and think he's a bad guy because he left for money. It's always going to be money for fans. But that's the narrative that the club want, because the club could have dispelled that, but they didn't. Why? Because they knew they were breaking up that squad.
Right. I think his book didn't do him any favours. That's all I'm going to say.
No, you're right.
No, it didn't. Right. Alison, you have given us an hour and 20 minutes of your
time. Thank you so much.
Tell everyone where they can find you. Tell us about your new podcast. Let everyone know what you're doing. You're doing amazing things. I love the series that you did. Our good friend of the show, Rebecca Lowe, and the interviews with Kay and everyone. So many great women on your show. Tell us about your new venture before you go.
Yeah, so during lockdown one, basically, I did this little kind of Instagram TV series, Talent Takes Time. To be honest, just to kind of keep me busy, and I thought it was a nice idea. Loads of people always get in touch with me and ask me how to get into the industry, and I thought it'd be a nice thing to do. It gets me hosting something because football had gone and I basically had no work, and I was like, oh. So I did this, and then amazingly it's kind of snowballed. I got some really amazing guests, as you said. Rebecca Lowe was just phenomenal, so open and honest, told me all about these great kind of stories of how she got into the industry. And so a podcast company actually approached me and said they'd love to turn it into a podcast. So I'm turning it into a podcast, which launches in a couple of weeks. So I'd love you to listen in. Basically, if you follow me on social media, Ali Bender TV, or also on my website, alisonbender.com, I'm always going to be updating with the podcast when they come out. And it's a weird one because it was supposed to be to inspire women, but actually I think that anyone can listen to it. And also, you don't have to just be a presenter or in broadcast journalism or even in football, because I think a lot of the messages are really nice for anyone basically who's feeling like giving up in any job. Like, it, you know, it's about all the hurdles that come at you. It's called Talent Takes Time, because to be good at anything, you know, whether it's a footballer or a presenter or any other job, you just have to put in the hard yards. And I want it to be a bit of inspiration for anyone who feels a little bit mediocre. Maybe they didn't get the grades that they wanted or whatever. And I wanted to say that hard work and time can actually create excellence. It doesn't have to just be Alan, you know, someone who's naturally gifted.
So
I'm launching those podcasts, and then I've got another really exciting podcast later in the year, but I'll get to that at some point. But it's all about inspirational women within football, men's and women's, board level, all kinds. And I just interviewed Abby Wambach for that, and she was phenomenal. So I can't wait to release that.
Yeah, I love Abby. She's a really good interview, isn't she?
She's amazing. And I actually kept her way longer than I was supposed to, but I just couldn't.
Bit like us with you tonight, Alison.
Oh, it's all right. I'm gonna head off in a bit. But it's been lovely chatting to you. I've loved it. And I need to think, because people ask me this a lot, who's my worst interview and who's my worst manager I've interviewed as well, because it's a hard one. But Sir Alex Ferguson was tricky at times, because he would scare me. Suddenly, and you're like, you're in the hot seat. And that's another thing I was going to say, I'm always really scared actually when, if they fire something back at you, because you're not always ready for that.
Yeah.
And actually no one cares what I think, but you have to handle that in the right way, obviously. Mm-hmm. So managers,
he's
that do that,
you. He's I'm tested not. You, Alison.
I know, it's
he?
Horrible.
Tested
you'd,
you, yeah.
You'd do that, Kevin, you? You would definitely do
without
that.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt,
I know you so well, you'd definitely do that.
Yeah.
Well, brilliant stuff, Alison. Listen, thank you so much for joining us. You can find Alison on Twitter, Ali Bender TV. Is it Ali Bender TV on Insta as well?
Yeah. So Ali Bender TV on Insta, Twitter, and now TikTok.
Hey.
I need to have a look. Up the Arsenal steps.
Did you? Oh, yeah. You sent me a picture of you at my ground.
I did. I'm going to shuffle all the different football grounds just for a bit of fun. But I started with you, so you should feel privileged that yours was the first.
Love it. Perfect. It so happens my gardener's shown up. I mean, he shows up at the most inopportune times. But Alison, thank you so much for joining us. What's your prediction for the game on Sunday?
Oh, my goodness. I think you'll score. I think it's going to be 3-1 to City.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, it's all right. Yeah, fair enough.
See ya.
Well, look, thanks so much for joining us, Alison.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Brilliant stuff from you. Thank you.
Bye, Alison.
Bye, Alison.
You don't know how to leave. You'll have to end me. Oh, leave.
How about, I don't want to remove you, but I'm going to do it. 3, 2, 1. There you go.
Yay. She's
great. She's brilliant. Absolutely great. She was.
She's always really insightful. Really good stuff. Always has so many great things to say. And, you know, she does some, she's not afraid to ask the tough questions as well. So, yeah, good stuff.
Us women are like that. We always ask the tough questions.
This was a very impressive comment. Your most impressive guest to date. And we've had quite a few, haven't we? Yeah. I'm not ceramic, am I? Anyway.
Yes, you are. You're testing everyone.
Well, look, it's time to go, isn't it?
Yeah, let's do our predictions for Sunday and then let's go.
Okay, can I do two predictions? One if we play like an FA Cup final and the other if we play like it's the Premier League.
No,
you can't, Sophie. Come
more
on.
Two.
To who? The home
someone,
team?
Someone.
You know what she'll do, Kev, if it's 4-2?
She'll say 4-2 and whoever wins.
Claim it.
I said that.
I told him to come on at that time.
I'm going to keep on the losing streak because I predicted that we would lose against Leeds and we won. So I'm going to say we're going to lose 4-2 against City. You're welcome, everybody.
Oh, God.
I haven't got us to win either.
God, I have. What the hell's going on? I'm the only one. I think we're going to beat them 2-1. Am I mental then?
No. It can happen. But I think City are going to win 2-1.
I think it's one of those games where everyone expects City to win. And this is just so Arsenal to go and do it. And I think they'll go for it. So I'm going 2-1 Arsenal.
Oh, Sonny as well is going 2-1.
I love to be proven wrong. I would love to be proven wrong. But again, which Arsenal's going to turn up? I don't know.
What'd you go for, Kev?
2-1 to City.
All right, I'm 2-1 to Arsenal. And you're 4-2 to City.
Yeah.
You know what? It could be. It easily could be with us, but we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, if Willian comes on and scores, I think Willian's saving his moment for the North London derby.
Oh, my God. You know, oh, my life.
And all will be forgiven. All of it, PG, all the way out the window.
If he comes on at 75 minutes and scores the winner, I'm going to get Willian put on my top.
Will you tattoo him? Willian.
No, not tattoo. No, I'd never say that. No tattoos.
People don't say no tattoos.
Absolutely not. No, because I'll be held to that. I think that Willian, I don't think he's going to do it against Tottenham. I don't think he's going to do it against anyone. But if he did, I will get him on my jersey.
All right. Well, look, we will be back for a post-game show after Man City. Depends, actually. If it's going to be an absolute thrashing, we might not. No, we will be. We will be back. And thanks to our sponsor, footballprizes.co.uk. You guys smashed it this week. A ton of you went and bought some tickets.
Fantastic.
And I don't know who won the draw, but our listener was number 51, Scott, who won it. There's going to be another opportunity to win a free ticket next week. We're going to give that away during Kevin's show. By the way, he got the answer right. And first, Kevin scored one goal in that tie against Benfica in the European
Cup.
Sorry,
who got the ticket? Who got the
Scott,
raffle ticket?
Scott won it.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
good luck to Scott.
Yes, well, it's happened. The draw's happened, but I haven't heard who's won it yet. So we'll find out.
Hopefully, if he won, he would put it on.
And also, we've really spoilt you this week with guests, haven't we? We've had Mark on the post game. We had Dan doing the Arteta. You have to, all of you, go and watch the Arteta interview with these two and Dan. It was absolutely brilliant. We've had Robbie, we've had Alison. I think we've spoilt you rotten this week.
Yep.
I think the Arsene Wenger one was good.
That's what I'm saying. It was brilliant.
You said Arteta.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I meant the Arsene Wenger one on Monday night with you two and Dan was absolutely brilliant. Yep. The thing is, if I'd have been on it, I'd have been agreeing with you all anyway. So you didn't need me. But yeah, very good. Very good.
Great stuff, you guys. Right. Great guest. Brilliant shows all week. Check out our YouTube channel if you missed anything. Back Sunday night, and then next week we've got some more treats in store for you. As you know, the Highbury squad brings you some diverse content. It's not just about game day and post-game analysis, all right? So you can reach us at thehighburysquad@gmail.com anytime if you want to say hi, if you want to send us any feedback. Some brilliant comments on YouTube. We'll go through some of those on Kevin Says segment next week, because you have been writing in your hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and you've been watching in your thousands, and we really appreciate it. So until then, KC, good luck to your Toffees tomorrow against Liverpool as well. Come on.
The Toffees.
Come on, the Toffees. Do the red noses.
We love the Toffees.
Oh, God.
Oh, come on, the Blues. Come on, the Blues. Enjoy your Friday night, everybody. It's not much left, but always Arsenal.